As I mentioned earlier, the CIUSLAW COHO partnership just secured several years of funding, so we'll likely be hiring for various types of positions, from restoration practitioners to stakeholder engagement and outreach to accounting and monitoring. And the Watershed Council is currently hiring for a financial manager. And then I'll just reiterate that our native plant distribution is coming up, so be on the lookout for sign-up forms on our website. And you can also join our newsletter by emailing Tim at outreach@CIUSLAW.org. We also have monthly recreational activities open to everybody in the watershed, whether or not you're a member of the Watershed Council, so you can find more information about that on our website as well.
Great. Well, Rosemary, thanks so much for taking time to be here today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you, Dina. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks also to Pacifica Radio member stations for airing Beyond Your Front Door. And thanks to local band Jumpin' the Rails for their rendition of Smith Chapel, the theme song used for this show. I hope you have a great week and get some time beyond your front door.
Drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute now and help us meet our $70,000 goal by the end of the year. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an Everyday Pursuit and Survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder,
Board Operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Today, John Griffiths interviews Nico Serra, advocate, regarding durable medical equipment. But before we get to that, we are reaching out to our listeners to remind you to give. You can be a thread in the warm blanket of independent radio by donating. Just go to kboo.fm/give.
So, in the studio with me today, even though we're not in the studio, is Nico Serra.
Hello.
Hiya, Nico.
Hi, John. How's it going?
Same as always.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to join you doing this work. So, as you said, my name is Nico Serra. I use they pronouns. And I do professional facilitation and teaching, mostly within the disability community. And... yeah, lots of advocacy work, in part because I also have really serious health concerns, which keeps me very busy keeping the support and services that I need to live a good quality life. So that's what brings me here today.
Well, that sounds like the first question has been answered. Just tell us about a little bit about yourself. I'm aware that you're working on a project, so can you tell us what the project is and how it relates to the community and how important it is and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I have been needing a lot of support in my life with what is called durable medical equipment, and that is like a huge category of stuff, from like hospital beds to wheelchairs to crutches to nebulizers, and there's other stuff in there like that I don't use, like CPAP machines, and gosh, there really could be a lot more things included in that, but for some reason they're not. Like, I need a specific setup to sleep well. So some of the things I already know I have to pay out of pocket for. That's just how it is right now, and until we get to universal healthcare, I think that's how it will be. The stuff that's supposed to be covered, I have found that it's still very difficult to get those things covered and taken care of in a timely manner.
When you say, okay, so when you say something like sturdy medical equipment, did I get that right?
Yeah, basically that's what it means, but it's called durable medical equipment in the medical world. And they often abbreviate it into saying DME.
You know, I was just thinking to myself that I would think any medical equipment would be durable. Can you go into any depth on what it means?
Yeah. Okay, so I think you know that I'm from Detroit, right? Uh-huh. Michigan. Once upon a time, I learned about something called designed obsolescence, I think is the term. And what that means, things were, cars in particular, at least during a period of time, were being designed to not last forever. In fact, that they kind of had like a set life based on mileage, for example. So anyway, the stuff that happens with like the wheelchairs, for example, it reminds me of that it seems like things just don't last as long as we would hope them to, and they're not as reliable or, you know, sturdy, to use the word you said earlier. For people who are growing still, children, they need to get different size wheelchairs way more often than I do, because I'm done growing. In fact, I'm probably at the point in my life where I'm starting to shrink. But for kiddos, they keep growing and they hit growth spurts, and sometimes that happens really quickly. You know, you think about how many pairs of shoes kids go through, and jackets and clothes and stuff like that. It's the same thing for the wheelchairs, but the way the rules are written, they are only allowed to get new wheelchairs as often as full-grown adults are, which is every 5 years. So if you can imagine just how much a kid grows from the time they're born to 5 years old, and then again from 5 years old to 10 years old to 15 years old after that, those are really big differences. You know what I mean? You go from being a little tyke to being a full, you know, essentially a grown adult. And so they're being held to the same standard that's just totally inappropriate. They're treated like little adults, but they're not, they're kids. And so they're, you know, they're just in a different stage of their development as human beings. And so there's just things like that that aren't always considered. And there's like, some of it can be taken care of here in our state, in Oregon, but some of it comes from rules from the federal government. And it gets super complicated with this stuff, just like dealing with Social Security. Like, there are these ridiculous rules that are so complex and hard to understand. It's nearly impossible to do that. And so it's important to ask for help when things aren't working well.
No, the social system does not work very well.
Right. Yeah, I always say it's like a, you know, quote unquote safety net is like, if it were too close to the ground and the holes between were way too big. So like, if you think about somebody doing like trapeze doing circus stuff, and you know, that's probably something I would ask if I was a trapeze artist, is like, okay, how far off the ground is the trapeze net, and how close, you know, how tight is the weave of the net? And then you could say, well, that doesn't sound safe, I'd rather not. But unfortunately, in the medical world, we don't have that choice. We're thrown into it, and we have to jump. There's no option besides jumping. And so that that can lead to a lot of frustration and suffering, unfortunately. And I heard a good friend, Layla Hale, talk about how disability is, you know, we're the only minority community that you can join at any moment. You go out to the grocery store to get something and something bad happens on the way back and forth. When I moved to Portland, I activation alert, which is something I like to say before I say something that's going to be potentially what people often call triggering. Like I moved to Portland and I got hit by a car. Like I was riding my bicycle, I got hit by a car and dragged around a corner, and I was doing everything right. I was wearing my helmet, I was looking both ways, I was doing everything, but the person who hit me didn't see me, didn't use a blinker, and didn't check their blind spot, and that was that, you know. So it can happen so quickly, and if we live to be old enough, it will probably happen. So anyway, to have this be a regular, natural part of aging and living as a human being in this world, and then at the same time it feels almost like it doesn't feel like I think the world is not set up to accommodate us or people who join us. So
I always this is a long... as the government's attempt to punish us for having the disability and no longer contributing to the workforce.
I think that I think there's a lot to open up there, and it feels a little bit like the Pandora's box or a can of worms sometimes, because I think that you're right in a lot of ways that it feels like a punishment, and at the same time I don't think that technically it's meant to be a punishment. And at the same time, in the richest, most wealthy, most well-resourced reality in the history of humanity, it doesn't need to be like, it could be so much better. And yet our society has collectively not decided that this is a priority, you know. And it's that lack of political will to change things. And I think that part of it too is that people, like, they don't want to consider that they'll ever be one of us, you know. Like, people think they're going to live forever. They think they're always going to be able to, you know, go hiking and rock climbing and surfing and swimming and all of the things. Well, I used to do that stuff too. Well, not so much the surfing, but all those other things I did. And I can't do any of those things now. But I'll get back to your question here, which was projects that we're working on around this. So basically, I'll tell you in the form of a story here. So my partner, Alan, also uses a power chair, and we had some trouble earlier this year with going out. We went out of the city to a park that we found. There's this, I think it's called Rails to Trails, which is this old train tracks that were converted into accessible hiking trails, and they're very accessible, which is so cool, because most of the time it's really hard to find places to go out in a wheelchair and be out in nature. So we got set up at a place outside of town, not too far outside of Portland, to do this. And we're just having a lovely time. And we're probably about 4.5 or 5 miles from our campsite, our cabin. And Alan's chair just died. It was really unsafe. And we got really lucky, because we've heard stories about when people's chairs die like that and people get activation alert, people get thrown from their chairs and get hurt really bad. And so Alan was really lucky that that's not how it happened for him. And at the same time, we were out in the middle of nowhere-ish with no one else with us. And I am an ambulatory wheelchair user, which means that I can walk a little bit, but for the most part, I use my power chair to get around too. So anyway, we did the best we could with what we had. I have on my power chair, I can put my legs up. So what I did was I put my legs up on my chair, and then they kind of stop where I put them. So I put those up as high as I could, almost like a battering ram. And then I hooked my arm around his headrest, and I put both of my feet on the back of his chair, on the back wheels, and I pushed with the power of my chair with one hand and holding onto the chair with my other hand, and steered with my feet. And it's like complicated just to explain. It was even more complicated to do. and it was scary, because we were like out in the middle of nowhere and there were curves and stuff like that. And so trying to steer when I don't, I don't have a lot of physical strength anymore either, and like control over my muscles and stuff like I used to. So it was really, really hard. And just making sure that Alan didn't get pushed off of the trail, like, it was just, yeah, it was hard, it was scary. And we had probably like a quarter of a mile we had to go back to get to the nearest road. And we knew that when we crossed past the first time, we saw some volunteer people clean the grounds. So we went back. It took a very long time to get back that quarter of a mile to where they were. And then, having been a former wilderness guide, I usually, knock on wood, have things in my bag to get by for a little bit. So like some stuff to stay warm and some food and water and ways to get in touch with people if my cell phone doesn't work and stuff like that. And so I had my little survival pack kind of set up with me. And thank goodness our lovely care worker, Christy, was nearby and had a key to the van. Because we have, again, very lucky to have a passed down secondhand wheelchair accessible minivan. It's like almost 20 years old, but it's still pretty great. We eventually got back to the cabin with Christy's help, and we called to get help from the wheelchair repair people the next day because it was too late the night before. And they were not much help. They told us how to reset the motors, and the guy was like, you know, where were you when your chairs stopped working? And we were like, oh, well, we were going over this sort of rickety bridge. And he was like, well, don't go over that bridge anymore. Done. He thought it was done. We know that we go over sidewalks that are more bumpy than that bridge just in the city of Portland. So that wasn't going to be a solution. But he like canceled our appointment for the future. And so, like, this was the beginning of what took, it was like 6 months to get this worked out. And after a couple of months, like, it just wasn't going anywhere fast. And we would call and we would say, we need a loaner power chair. Alan's a quadriplegic. He can't get around even our apartment without this chair. We need this help. And they just kept giving us the runaround. And it was just so hard. And so eventually one of our friends reminded us that we should get out to the Oregon Health Authority Ombuds program. And that's OMBUDS, Ombuds program. And so we reached out to them and they greatly sped up the process. They helped us get in touch with the people we need to get in touch with. They are kind of like a one-stop shop for getting the help you need. Now, they have certain things they have to stay within, right? So the Oregon Health Authority Ombuds Program, they have to keep all of the work they're doing within the Oregon Health Plan coverage and care. So they can help us with that. And then Alan and I also volunteer with the Residential Facility Ombuds Program. And that is another program that only works within a certain area. And that is around residential facilities, adult foster care, group homes, medically fragile children, people with mental health stuff that live severe mental health stuff that have to live in a group setting and things like that, or have to maybe isn't the right word, but anyway. We were able to get the help from them, and in the process, the director of the program, who's named Ellen Penny, she really encouraged us to keep telling our stories and keep figuring out how we could turn this into something more, and got us in touch with another person named Joseph Lowe, I think, and we all started really talking about how to strategize and get things fixed as quickly as possible and get a loaner chair in the meantime, and then at the same time do something bigger, which we call the listening session. And we just invited anybody we could think of to come to this listening session and tell their stories about dealing with durable medical equipment and the difficulties that we've had. And so we did that last so that was on this November 18th, 2022. And a lot of people came to this. It was like, I don't know, 50 or 60 people, I think, showed up, and people were really brave to tell their stories about the struggles they've had or that their family members have had.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Disability Justice, an Everyday Pursuit in Survival, here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. If you're enjoying this conversation, show your support for this program and all your favorite KBOO programs by donating to KBOO's end-of-the-year membership drive today at kboo.fm/give.
Nico, I was just kind of curious. So, I mean, where's the justification that this is coming from? I mean, I understand that we live in a capitalistic society. It's all about making money. So there, the plan obsolescence is more or less about making money. But at the same time, this equipment that's aimed at people are generally aimed at people who are medically fragile, who are on SSI. Mm-hmm. And when you make underneath, when you only make $840 a month and you can't save any more than $2,000, it doesn't make it any sense to screw with people's lives to plan obsolescence, their wheelchair, or even when your life is dependent on a machine, if you have to use a machine to breathe through, and it's got planned obsolescence in it, and those people got to sit there and constantly worry, is this machine going to crap out on me when I can't get replacement parts and I'm going to sit here and suffocate to death?
That's really true. And I think that you're right. Ventilators are a part of this, part of the durable medical equipment. Well, I don't think that anybody who makes any of this equipment would ever admit that there is a planned obsolescence. Okay, just like in the car industry in Detroit, nobody ever said that was what was happening. I don't even know actually how that came out. Probably workers that told people, kind of like whistleblowers. But I don't know that history. And I don't know the history of how it's happened with medical equipment either. Now, what I do know is Alan has been using a power chair since he was 5, and he's 37 now, I think. And he says that the equipment is way better than it used to be, which is kind of horrifying. And so I don't think that it's explicitly meant to crap out or, be not work after a certain amount of use and all that stuff. But that is the reality of what we deal with. And it does, it can cause a lot of people to live what I used to live as was a small life. I didn't do very much. And I didn't feel like I could do very much. And in part, sometimes that was true. And I didn't have the equipment or even just a wheelchair ramp to get in and out of my home okay. So it was just so much energy and effort to get in and out of my home every day. And then taking medical transportation or the TriMat lift. And it was just like, if I had a doctor's appointment across town or over at like OHSU up on the hill, it was like my whole day. Like, you're on the bus for TriMet lift can keep you on the bus for the rule is 2 hours. Sometimes I would be on the bus for much longer than that. And so you can imagine that means that I didn't really get to do very much with my life because I was just trying to get back and forth to my medical care. So one, I want people to know about the Oregon Health Authority Ombuds program. Well, I'm just going to say a phone number here. There's a website, there's an email address, it's on the very bottom of the page. But if you or anyone you know is having a hard time with durable medical equipment or getting medical coverage, anything that should be a part of your Oregon health plan coverage, you can bring to the Oregon Health Authority Ombuds program. And if they can help you, they will. If they can't, they will probably point you in the right direction to get the help you need. So their phone number is 877-642-0450. Again, it's 877-642-0450. And then, you can just type them in on a search engine and find them. And I would say, so getting involved in the future, keep spreading the word about the program so that people know that they can get the help they need and deserve whenever they need it. And we're just starting to talk more about things that we can do together so we can collectively make it better for ourselves and everybody else. And until we get to universal healthcare, which hopefully is something that we'll get to work on together someday too, we can keep demanding what we need and deserve.
Well, I'm just kind of curious, you know, you've been mentioning that you've got a group together, and I can't help but to believe that the Ombudsman is really great and everything, but I think people would might want to join, you know, the Nico Sarah group or whatever you're calling this group, or, you know, I think they'd like to join that. Is there some information around how would somebody join that group? What number would they use?
I'm on my way of exiting Twitter right now. So I would tell people probably to find me on Facebook. I have a public page and people can get in touch with me there. And we don't have an official group that's just dedicated to this. We had this listening session, but mostly it was getting people in touch with the Ombuds program to find out about the help they need and deserve, and to give everyone an opportunity to share their stories. So I'm not sure exactly how or where that will evolve to. However, as I was saying earlier, like I do, you know, I teach and do facilitation, and I spend at least like a part-time job of just navigating the systems and services. So, you know, there's always advocacy efforts that I am working on with Alan. Alan's over at Community Vision, and they have been around for over 30 years working with our communities to make things better in many ways. And, you know, I'll just do one little pitch there, you know, reach out over to me over Facebook or get in touch with people at Community Vision, especially if you're needing help with like assistive technology for people who are, again, it's a durable medical equipment thing, but also getting set up with the right people can help, that they have an assistive technology lab that has all this equipment, some of which is for people who don't speak. To have computers help people, people can learn how to use computers with their eyes, and then they can use the computer to talk for them, or they can use what they call a switch, which will sometimes be placed on either side of someone's head or you know, at their fingertips or something like that, so that people can communicate and tell the world what they want and what they need. And it might just start out by saying yes, no, or maybe, or I don't know, just maybe three things, right? And again, those assistive technology things are a part of the durable medical equipment, and so everybody deserves to have what they need, especially if they have the insurance coverage to get it. And getting between here and there is sometimes, well, almost always way too hard and complicated, and so having a guide on that journey is really, really helpful. So yeah, I hope that answers your question, and I really appreciate you talking about this stuff with me today.
What are people looking for when they go on Facebook?
So Nico, N-I-C-O, Nico, N like Nancy, I-C-O, and then my last name is spelled like Sierra without the I, S-E-R-R-A. And yeah, I have most of my posts on there are public, and I like to be connected with other people who are dealing with the same stuff, because we can work together, I think, to make it better.
Thanks for coming on to the show. I really appreciate you taking time to stop and talk with us.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and don't forget to support our end of the year membership drive by donating to kboo.fm/give.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kboo.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at KBOO.